is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's great to be back. It's not just good to be back, it's great to be back. Season 15, we got there. Episode 1, we've been missing for a month. It's been a game of musical chairs. Who's moved around in the Absolute Rally world? Who has moved? Is there anybody there? That's the quick question. Jack Bengen, are you there?
I'm here, Tony Simpson. Thanks for having me back.
There you go, he's back, he's back. Ryan Champion, are you there?
I am here, yeah. So we've done well to get back on again, haven't we? Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you've done really well, to be fair. After the calamity that was the Absolute Rally quiz at the end of last year, and obviously there was Left on Air Gate, of course, where we left a little bit in, which was frowned upon, and we had to do a re-edit, and there was people who were very pleased that they got the re-edited version. And yeah, so there you go. And what's really amazing is that episode's still being downloaded as we speak. So there you go. So thanks for that, folks. We hope you enjoyed last season, and we hope you had a great Christmas, a great new year. Obviously, we are back. We're back probably a little bit a week earlier than probably what we said we were going to be, because just so much has gone on. There's just so much about to happen. And I thought, why not come back a week earlier? Why not come back the week of possibly one of the most magical events of the year for me? And I know we say this about all these iconic events, and again, I'm using that word iconic. If you're playing Absolute Rally Bingo, there you go, straight away. We've got Rally Monte Carlo, and it's to get into the mood of Rally Monte Carlo. Ryan Champion, you're in Bahrain.
Yes. So the weather's not quite like Monte Carlo, but then I was in Sweden last week, so that was a bit more like it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jack Bengen, are you warm or cold, or are you clothed? What's going on?
Well, there's snow going down in my Richmond office at the minute in London. So
actually, in the office, you might want to look at the ceiling.
Not inside the office, just outside the windows.
Okay. Right, boys.
Definitely no snow here.
I can imagine. Right, a little bit of admin before we start. For those who got involved in the Kielder mug thing, brilliant. We're going to do something a little bit different this season. There is a batch of mugs left. I think there's about 20, 25 of both mugs in total. What we're going to do, we're going to openly encourage you to donate to a charity, and it can be any charity you donate to. All we need from you is a screen grab, and if you send that to us, we will see whether we can get a mug out to you. So it can be as little or as much as you want to do. It can be rally related, it can be not related to rally, but just be sensible. You know, the mugs are quite expensive to produce, and once these ones are gone, they're gone. But that's what we're going to do this year. We're not going to do the kind of the quizzy thing or whatever. We just decided to, with these mugs, we thought it'd be quite nice to do something for charity. We were going to do eBay and stuff like that. It's just far too complicated. So we just went with, well, if somebody wants to make a donation, does a screen grab, emails it to us, and then we'll send it over to the guys at Kielder, and it'll be kind of a first come, first serve basis. There you go. So that's what the plan is for this season. So if they might go this week, they might all go next week, or whatever it is. Once they've gone, and we'll let you know. We'll keep you updated. Thanks for that, Jack. We thought it was just a nice way of doing something with the balance of the mugs before we move on to the next challenge of what the guys at Kielder want me to do with regards to the quiz for season 16. That's how far ahead they're already working. God bless them. And again, we wouldn't be here without them. Right, boys. We need to start talking now. Now, silly season is finished. The music stopped, Ryan Champion. And out of all the people we thought were going to have seats, most of them got seats. But poor Craig Breen was left without a seat. Was that a shock to you?
Yes, I think it was. And, you know, it's come at a really bad time for him, hasn't it? Because he's learned his trade, he's established in a World Rally Car. He's established in the World Rally Championship. He was showing speed, and now he can't build on that. So it's such a shame for him. And as we saw last year, he started to build some momentum during the year, and then there was one Mr. Loeb came and stole his car, and then he had to sort of build the momentum back up again. And I think it is a real shame that we're not going to see him in Monte Carlo. I mean, I think he's trying to get out again later in the year, and you know, the sooner the better, because as I said, I think he was at a stage where he could really put in some good performances.
Jack, you know, we I felt like we spoke about this every week in the last kind of 4 or 5 weeks of last season. I think we all kind of had an idea where everybody was going to end up, and I think we all kind of relied on the fact that Craig invariably was probably going to end up at M Sport, and how wrong we were.
Yeah, it's a very very unusual situation to be in. I thought everything was all sorted before Christmas, and we kind of knew what was going to happen, and we kind of knew where everyone was going to be. But it's very disappointing to see Craig without a seat. I do see he is doing the Galway International Rally, the first round of the Irish Tarmac Championship, so he's not going to be completely out of practice. But hopefully, he gets back out in the WRC later in the year.
I think that's important. I really do think it's important. Now, one again, I'm always conflicted when it comes to this. Citroën very much went, obviously, once Abu Dhabi went, they've gone, they've committed now to two cars. Rye, you spoke about this. Jack spoke about this. I'm going to come to you first, Jack. Obviously, they're quite clearly pursuing the drivers' championship as opposed to the manufacturers' championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we looked at Toyota and Hyundai. They're running three cars, and they're going to be in the best place to fight for the championship. So, yeah, absolutely. Looks quite unusual. Citroën putting so much money into a WRC program and then not trying to win the team's championship, which, is really unusual. There's some manufacturers who back the sport, not just WRC, but lots of other top-level motorsports. So to see a team going in there without the aim of winning the manufacturers' championship is quite unusual, really. But it'll be good to see. You know, I think they'll have all their... they're all their eggs in two baskets, if you like, whereas Hyundai and Toyota got three or four. So it could be interesting, and it could, the drivers individually, OJ and Lappi, could actually benefit out of it quite strongly.
Right. Where are you with this? Because, you know, Jack's hit the nail on the head. It is really, really unusual to see a team quite clearly pursuing a driver's championship as opposed to a manufacturer's, really.
Yeah, and I do think it's odd. I mean, we hear the manufacturers normally saying they're in it. They are in it for the manufacturer title. You know, if they win the driver's title, great, but they want to win manufacturer titles. So it is strange when you're spending that much money anyway. I mean, okay, I know the cost of a third car is significant nowadays, but in comparison to the overall budget, you would have thought that it wasn't so high when you're taking all the kit to all the rallies anyway. So. Yeah, it's quite a surprising decision. It's not like they didn't have a choice of drivers. They had a choice of current drivers that could have kept on. It would have been a perfect number three. And they maybe look at the likes of Hyundai and Toyota, or I guess Hyundai more recently with the addition of Loeb. But I mean, they have fantastic driver squads now, and maybe they think it would have been an uphill battle to win the manufacturer's title. I'm not sure. It does seem strange. Like we said, committed to two cars. I'm sure Augier will go very well, and it'll be interesting to see how Lappi gets on with the new team.
Actually, you've led me quite conveniently there. Jack, do you see this as almost too much pressure on Lappi?
No, I think it's the opposite. I think everyone expects, you know, Sebastian to lead that team and to dominate Azapeka, and you know, I think Azapeka's in a situation where he can go in without any pressure because he's up against arguably one of the greatest WRC drivers of all time, and no one's expecting anything of him. So I expect him to be very quick. I think it's difficult to say exactly how close he'll be to Sebastian over the course of the season, but I think he's still learning. We've got to remember that he's not been in the WRC very long, and he's still getting to grips with some of the events that he's not done so many times, so he does lack that experience a little bit. But I think a lot of it comes down to what the Citroën's going to be like this year, doesn't it, and how much it's improved for 2019.
Well, again, that's where I was going to write. There's been, Chris has done a piece this week in MM, which we'll talk to Jack about in a second. You know, he was unhappy. You know, it wasn't a happy camp for him at Citroën. How much change can there be to that car, apart from the obvious one being Sebastian Ogier? Just, we all know about those jokers that can be played and stuff like that. But outside of that, really, how much of a different vehicle is that going to be than the one that Chris Meek got out of to the one that Sebastian Ogier is going to get into?
Well, I think the key thing to remember there is the change that they made in the middle of the season. I think compared to the car that Chris Meek got out of, there is quite a difference now. But obviously, they made the change, and towards the end of the year, the car looked a lot more consistent. So I think we'll certainly see a very competitive Citroën with Ogier at the wheel. Like I said, they seem to, with a big geometry change that they did during the year, they seem to find much more consistency from the car. And obviously, it's always been quick on tarmac. It's always been quick in Monte Carlo. So I think Ogier will be, it'll be very hard to beat in Monte Carlo. I mean, it's interesting that you just said about, you know, Chris being unhappy at Citroën, and then we're seeing Lappi move there, and Lappi just wasn't the same person at Toyota last year, was he? You know, if we look back to 17, he was a fantastic driver, winning rallies and the coming man, and then last year, just wonder what happened there.
Well, we speculated on that, didn't we, quite a bit, whether his head was turned or whatever, or whether he was clearly, you know, a number three driver, as it were. You know, maybe that was, you know, he didn't see a way past, or Tanak didn't see a way past Yari Matti, and maybe he needed to go and, you know, establish himself elsewhere. I don't know. What do you think, Jack?
It's a difficult one without being a fly on the wall, isn't it, to know exactly what's going on there. But I think it's very, very obvious from Ezepeka's body language that he was not happy in that situation, especially in the second half of last year. You know, it's a difficult situation to be in when you've got two very strong teammates in a very strong car, and you know, you're battling against them, and you know he was the least experienced of those three, and it's you know, sometimes very difficult, like I said, to really go up against teammates of that quality. You know, Ojt Tanak, many people describing him as the, you know, the fastest driver in the WRC now, and you know, Jari Matalapla has been around for a long time, knows the rallies well, and on his day can produce some very strong results. So I imagine it was a very difficult situation for him to be in, and maybe it was just a case of him feeling like he'd been pushed aside a little bit, and the favour had turned on Ojt and Yari.
He just didn't look like the same driver, though, did he? I mean, you know, the previous year, yes, he was up against tough competition, but if he wants to win a world championship, he's got to beat tough competition, and he just didn't look the same driver during last year.
I just feel that, and this is, again, we are, as Jack said, you know, unless you're a fly on the wall, you never know. Unless he ever came on and told us straight, you never know. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll get him one day. Who knows? But I just wonder whether, you know, he knew he was going at the end of the season. You know, you just wonder midway through that season, you know, whether he was told that perhaps, you know, maybe a Chris Meek was going there or whatever. You know, we don't know, do we? You know, maybe the moment that Chris left Citroën, you know, it was always going to be Toyota. We know he spoke to other teams because he said he spoke to other teams. But I think, boys, if we all had a choice, I think we probably all would have picked Toyota, wouldn't we?
I think if you take Hyundai as an example, that some of the other drivers, apart from Thierry Neuville, have suffered in the setup direction of where the car's gone because of where Thierry wants it to go, I think is fair to say. Could be a similar situation with Ezepeka, where he spent a lot of last year driving a car that wasn't quite set up for his liking. Maybe it's geared more towards Ojt and Yari, and that plays more into the fact that he's kind of the third driver in that team, and he was always going to be the third driver in that team, wasn't he? He was going to be the third driver again this year, so maybe that changed for him or just refresh things, and you know, it's a chance for him to move more in his own direction.
Wow. Well, that takes us very conveniently to Chris Meek. Ryan Champion isn't the third driver there, is he? Where do we see the pecking order? Is there a pecking order?
I don't think so at the minute. I think, you know, the first as ever in WRC, the first few rallies will probably start to form that pecking order, I guess, because there's no two ways about it. Ojt Tanak is going to be tough to beat in that car. We've seen him really dominate the last few rallies. Oh, he didn't win them all, but his pace in the car was incredible. Now, if Chris can get up to speed and he can match Ojt Tanak, then fantastic. But you know, it's a tough ask for Chris. He's been out for a while. We know the car can do the job, arguably the best car in the championship, but he's got, you know, arguably one of the fastest men alongside him. So he'll want to get up to speed quickly for that very reason, because he can't afford three or four rallies in and to be well behind on points to Tanak. Or else, like you said, that pecking order does start to form itself. But hey, isn't it exciting that we're talking about Chris Meek going to Monte Carlo? Because 6 months ago, I don't think any of us would have bet too much money on that. So, you know, really, really exciting to see Chris and arguably the top team with a team boss like Tommy Mäkinen, who clearly thinks he can do something with Chris Meek. He thinks he can get the best out of Chris Meek, or else why put him in the car?
Jack, is this Chris in the best possible scenario? And what I mean is by that, he performs inevitably when he's got, you know, the gun to his head almost. You know, there isn't the relaxing 2 to 3 year deal here. This is 12 months. Let's see how we go.
Yeah, it's difficult. I'm not really sure whether it's pressure on or pressure off. I think on himself, I think there's probably no pressure because he's thinking, you know, I've got the best car out there. I'm, you know, obviously confident in his own ability and believes that he's one of the best drivers out there. So theoretically, he should be quite confident going into the year that there's not many expectations of him. People are expecting him to be quick, but are people expecting him to fight for the championship in his first year against Hoyt? I'm not really, you know, personally, I don't know if that's the thoughts of all our listeners and you guys, but for me, he's just got to go out there and he's got to keep it on the road. I think that's the biggest thing for Chris Meek. He can't afford to go out there early on and crash straight away. You know, the critics will be on him and, you know, there'll be lots of questions around Tommy and what, you know, why he signed him and all that kind of stuff. So he's a good, solid Monte Carlo bed in, a lot like Hoyt did last year, actually. Hoyt, I think it was really underrated what Hoyt did last year, because the first half of the year, he was relatively quiet. It was just pumping in podiums, you know, doing the absolute best he could get out of the car. And when he felt comfortable and the car was in a position that he liked, the second half of the year, he was almost unstoppable. So a similar sort of tactic from Chris Meek, I think, is what I'd like to see. You know, bed yourself in, get some good points on the board, take advantage of those early rallies where you've got good road position, and then when you're in the second half of the year, that's when you feel comfortable and you fight for the wins.
Jack, it seems odd to actually say this, but the refugee of the WRC, of course, aside from, you know, Craig Breen, we mentioned at the top, at one point was actually your hero.
Are we talking about Sebastian Loeb?
We are talking about Sebastian Loeb.
I've got so many heroes. It's difficult to know.
Well,
at one point was his hero. I think he's always been his hero.
At one point he was, you know, he was a refugee in all this. It was staggering to think, after all what had gone before, and then coming back and getting a win at Citroën. And I know we've just spoke about Citroën, but I wanted to get to Hyundai. Ryan Champion, I'll be honest with you, if somebody would have said to me 12 months ago, would you have seen Sebastian Loeb in the Hyundai? Never, ever in a month of Sundays would I have said it.
And not 12 months ago, even 6 weeks ago. I mean, really surprising to see. Obviously, Sebastian has committed his career to the PSA group, but at the end of the day, if they didn't have a place for him and they didn't want him, you can understand him moving away. But it definitely surprising to see. You know, after all his other exploits as well with Peugeot and Citroën and all the other events he's been to do, I'm very surprised that they did let him go. But obviously that win has ignited his hunger again, and you know he's got a drive in a well-funded team. And again, great to see him back, and it just creates another exciting dimension to the championship.
Jack, do you feel, and I know there was a lot said about this, and obviously we've already done Citroën, of course, not running a third car and everything else, but I genuinely found it staggering that Citroën could not find a way of keeping a 9-time world champion that made his name with them, being French and all those things that have gone with it, getting the win, coming back and everything else. That was the biggest shock to me.
Yeah, maybe they didn't expect him to leave. Maybe they thought they'd find a program for him, or you know that he'd be happy not doing any rallying this year. But you know, maybe last year's just whetted his appetite enough that he felt comfortable looking elsewhere. But you know, I think
maybe the new driver in the team didn't want him there.
yeah, that could also have been true. But I think a lot's made of that sort of Ogier-Loeb rivalry that's a little bit over the top. And I think a lot of Ogier's problems from that time were with the management of the time, not with actually Sebastian himself. And we've seen them together, haven't we, talking and stuff last year at some of the events, and they look very, very happy chatting to each other. Whether that'd be the case when they're in the same team, I don't know. But I think Citroën a little bit disadvantaged compared to teams like M Sport, where you know, they're obviously struggling for budget, but they've just invested a lot of money in an R5 car, and they're not selling a lot of them yet. Whereas obviously, like, you've got M Sport, who've sold 300 R5 cars. You know, if Citroën had sold 2 or 3 WRC cars, if we're talking 4 or 5 years ago, then that would have helped to offset the budget for the third car, wouldn't it? But because they're struggling, you know, the teams are struggling to sell the current WRC cars, it's leaving a lot of pressure on selling R5 cars to generate that budget to put back into the program. So, you know, I think if we're talking a few years ago, I think Citroën may have been able to wangle another car on the you know, into the service part. But
you nearly said grid.
Did I?
Yes, you said. I'm sure they could have wangled another car onto the grid and then corrected yourself.
Oh, fair enough.
We don't do roundy-roundy, Jack.
Well, I do, so get on with it.
All right, fine. right. The changes at Hyundai, obviously, not only with the driver lineup, obviously another, you know, another refugee, not, you know, we mentioned Craig Breen, of course, but we also had Hayden Padden, who, again, I was staggered. And again, I was quite steadfast in the fact that his connections with Hyundai New Zealand and everything else. But was it just too good a moment for Hyundai to get Sebastian Loeb? Was it, is that what it came down to, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think if Sebastian Loeb hadn't gone there, then we would have seen Hayden Padden back in, certainly for some rallies. But you just don't turn down a 9-time world champion who's just won in WRC again, do you? I think for Hyundai, you know, again, like we just said, it's a big shock him leaving Citroën or leaving Peugeot Citroën, but that just doubles the impact with Hyundai. So, you know, there's going to be real interest about seeing Loeb in that team. We know the car's good. We've seen what Thierry Neuville's done with it. They just haven't quite managed to string a championship together. You know, we've obviously seen management changes there, but there's no doubting the car's fast, the team's capable, and they're well funded.
Now, I think can I just say one more thing now? I think it's amazing that 2 years ago, Citroen and Hyundai were you're fighting tooth and nail over trying to sign Andreas Mikkelsen. And I think going back to the off-season we've just had, I think Hyundai maybe would be thinking, should we have signed that two-year deal with Andreas? And if we had the choice, would we go with Hayden? I think if Hayden had had a better season in 2017, I think he would have had that seat, because Hayden was brilliant in the rallies that he did last year, and he showed a lot more performance than Andreas did. So I think it's a massive season for Andreas Mikkelsen to prove that he deserves to be there. And, you know, I think he has got the talent, but, you know, it's at this level, it's about delivering that talent against very high-class opposition, good cars and good drivers. So I think he's got a big year ahead.
I couldn't agree more. Can I just put a scenario to both of you? I'll come to you first, right? You know, the car, the number one driver clearly is Thierry Neuville. Whether that's, you know, I know what you said before with regards to everybody starts on ground zero at the beginning of the season, but, you know, Thierry's the man who's been the runner up for the last couple of years. If he's took the car in a certain direction and then you get a 9-time world champion who wants to go in a slightly different direction, but he's only doing 6 events, how's that pan out?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, most of these, as we saw over the last 10 years, I mean, the cars ultimately, the engineers take the lead nowadays on the cars. The engineers give the drivers what's fastest, and then the drivers can fine-tune them. So, you know, I don't think we should be quite in the realms of a driver taking a car in a very different route, like we saw with, say, Petter Solberg with a Subaru back in the day, or even a Tommy Raikkonen with a Mitsubishi. You know, there's a lot of adjustment in these cars, particularly now with active centre discs. They really can tailor them to the driver. So, but it is strange. You know, we've said this about a number of drivers. We just said it about Lappi. We're saying it about Mikkelsen. We've seen it with a lot of drivers since this new generation of cars came onto the scene. They seem to have a window, and some people can make them work very well in that window, and other people just seem to struggle to find it.
Jack, what's your take on that? Obviously, you know, you mentioned about Lappi before, maybe the car wasn't tailored for him. Obviously, Rai's just gone somewhere slightly different with his approach to it. Where do you see this? Do you think, you know, getting over the initial shock of seeing Sebastian Loeb in Hyundai overalls, you know, how much input do you think he's going to have, and, you know, how much input is that going to have towards, I suppose, Thierry Neuville, really, I suppose?
I think they'll take his advice very, very seriously, won't they? They'd be stupid not to. What we've got to remember at this point is Thierry's been with this car for a long time now, and he's been with the manufacturer a long time. They know him very well, but sometimes shaking things up works really well. And, you know, if Sebastian comes in and he's got some new ideas, I'm sure Thierry Neuville will be happy to listen to what Sebastian Loeb's got to say. And if he doesn't, then he's probably being a bit short-sighted, because even if he doesn't agree, you should still listen to what someone like that has got to say when they're coming in and giving you that kind of advice. So I think one of the big reasons why they've brought Sebastian in is because they know he'll get the results, but they also know that he'll have a lot of ideas and he'll be able to shake things up coming in. So I think there's a lot more to this than PR and performances. I think bringing someone like that into the team, who's proved last year that he's still got the talent, so he's still respected by his fellow drivers, that, you know, there's a big, big positive for bringing him into your team, I think.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, I haven't really thought about the PR side of things. I don't know what Sebastian Loeb's PR commitments are to high end. I obviously, they were always massive for the PSA group. Right, it seems like a really, really stupid question, but I ask stupid questions, so I'm going to ask it. Do you think there's even any logic behind PR for Hyundai? Does Sebastian Loeb do anything PR-wise for that particular brand, do you think?
Well, I guess he's got to, because he's a world champion, isn't he? And let's not forget there's been very few world champions recently.
Yeah.
So the fact that they've got a multiple world champion in the team is something that, you know, they simply haven't had, as it were. So two things, I think, like you said, I think he will help in terms of development. It'll be interesting for him because, you know, like we said, it's the first time really he's gone to a brand new team. So they'll have a different way of working. It's obviously based in Germany, not France. And he's got a wealth of experience. So I think he will bring the team on, even though they're at a very high level. I think there will be things the team will learn from Sebastian Loeb, and yeah, like I said, there's got to be PR value in having a multiple world champion. And you know, interestingly, we mentioned about whether or not Ogier would like Loeb in the same team. I take on board what Jack said about them getting on fine, but it was funny. Sebastian Ogier, as soon as he signed for Citroën, said he didn't agree with, what was it, drivers having guest appearances or something. He came out in public very, very quickly and said that.
Hmm.
No, can I
jump
in?
Go on, Jack. Go on. You can have that.
I think I think you're right, Ryan. I think he did come out very quickly about that, and it was interesting. It was like a little dig, wasn't it? Like a little psychological type thing.
It was.
But yeah, I think going back to the PR thing, I think I'm quite a good person from my position to talk about that. And I think let's take Loeb out of the equation for a minute. What would we be talking about Hyundai like on this podcast now? What would we be discussing? We'd be discussing the fact that they've sunk millions into this program and they're yet to win. What they want to win, the number of championships that they've targeted, and you know, they're still chasing a drivers' championship and all that kind of stuff. We'd be talking about that. We'd be talking about their decision to drop Hayden Paddon and the continuing on with Mikkelsen, even though Paddon arguably outperformed him last year. And yeah, we'd be talking about the leadership change there as well, which I've barely seen anything about, by the way, that Andre Adamo has now taken over as a team principal. So those three things all fairly have negative inclinations and that have barely been spoken about, because this move to bring Sebastian Loeb in, as important as it is for the other things we've talked about, like his speed and the benefit that he brings to the refreshing the team and stuff like that, the most important thing is Hyundai have started the year off positively with the great story that Sebastian Loeb's coming back and he's going to drive this team, and no one's talking about the fact that they've got a new team principal. They're probably underachieving as a WRC team for the amount of money that they've put in, and that they've made some difficult decisions when it comes to personnel with drivers and team people. So it's the Loeb signing is probably one of the biggest things Hyundai could have done in terms of starting the year off on a positive, starting off on the right foot.
Okay. With all that said, I just want to get to, we've got a limited amount of time with our man from Del Monte, who's currently in Bahrain. So before we let him go, I just want to get to M Sport, boys. Lots of changes. Jack just mentioned about management changes, of course, at Hyundai. Of course, that very similar thing has happened at M Sport. The organic changes, I suppose, were, I've known, we called him Grizzly when he used to come on. Don't think we can call him that anymore. I've known Rich Milner since he was doing parts at M Sport. He was on the customer side doing parts. I used to buy parts off him. So I've seen his rise all the way up. It seems a very, very natural fit, Jack, for Rick to be at the helm. And again, young management, young drivers.
Yeah, I think it's a good time. I think there's very little expectation on M Sport this year to achieve anything. I think, with younger drivers, less experience, they haven't got Sebastian Ogier. I think, we're all expecting M Sport to slip a little bit down the order, and I think it's a great time for Rich to come in and, attempt to start rebuilding that team. And I think it's also a good time for Malcolm to look at other areas of his business and to move away from the WRC side of things so much, because, M Sport's so multifaceted now. Obviously, Absolute Rally, this is absolute value. Listeners won't care about that too much, but I think it's a good thing for him sport that they've put Rich in. He can learn now while there's less pressure on, and you know, hopefully when they do sort of build back up to those kind of world championship winning performances, and Rich will have that experience. And yeah, I think he's a great bloke. He's lovely to have around. I'm very happy for him, and hope that he does really well this year as well.
Absolutely. Now, right, again, Rich has been there forever. He's kind of probably gone through Elvin's career as well. There's probably very few people that are as close to Elvin. Elvin arguably is the, in inverted commas, you know, and even though we said it doesn't exist at the moment, you would say he's probably team leader in inverted commas. A little bit of a freshen up as well for Elvin. Scott Martin, of course, who was very well known at M Sport because he co-drove for Matthew Wilson for a great period of time. Excuse me, before joining Craig Breen, of course. But Scott Martin's back at M Sport. You know, we're pretty much where he started his WRC career alongside Elvin. Elvin is kind of the man a little bit, isn't he?
Yeah, and firstly, it's great to see M Sport back, isn't it? Whether it was touch and go, we'll never really know probably how touch and go it was. But the fact that M Sport are in the championship, we've got to celebrate that. And you know, we might not see them winning as many rallies as they have done for the last couple of years, but they're back. There's a lot of development on the car. It's big year for Elvin Evans, isn't it? You know, like you said, he's arguably the number one really there now. He's the most established driver in the team, and he's got a big opportunity, but it's an important year for him to get some good results.
What do you think, results-wise, Jack? What do you think we need to see victories from Elvin this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think Elvin has got a point to prove now, hasn't he? He needs to prove that he deserves to be there. I think there was a lot of times last year where he gave up positions for Sebastian, but you know, fighting towards the bottom end of the top a lot of the time, and you know, his crash early in the year really set things up badly for him, and it was a little bit downhill from there. But I think, you know, he's got to hit the reset button now. He's got to feel grateful that he's still got a seat when people like Hayden Paddon and Craig Breen are on the sidelines, and he'll know that the pressure's on to deliver this year. So he hasn't really got a choice. You know, he's had multiple chances at this level now, and you know, we're all campaigning for him to come back after he won the British Championship in 2016, and you know, I think he did deserve to come back, and rightly be was a, you know, a big reward for the people who supported him. But at the same time, it's not just about winning one rally and then going missing for years. You've got to keep on, you know, pushing for those rally wins and being in the right position. And I think, you know, he was sacrificed a little bit last year at times, but also he's got to put himself in better positions in order so that, you know, M Sport can't afford to sacrifice him. And you know, now he's the team leader. You know, he does have to deliver. It's a big year for Elvin.
Just Timo Sunonen, I wanted to come to. Right, we you know, he was kind of steady away last year. There was times where I thought the times were impressive. Obviously, he's part of, I think he's part of Timo Jocke's crew, isn't he? I think he's one of his drivers, if memory serves right.
Yeah, yes, he is. You know, very much part of the Timo Jocke stable. Again, I think he's got to step up a bit, honestly. He's had some good performances, but I think following on the line of drivers in the Jocke mould, I think he needs to put in a few sparkling performances now. We need to see a bit of excitement, I think, from Sunderland. It just needs to up the game this year.
Yeah. Now, again, they've got two full-time cars, but they've got a third car currently for Pontus Tiedemann, and also friend of the show, Gus Greensmith, is going to share it as well on one event. I think he's doing Rally Portugal. We'll get Gus on to talk about that. Jack, just with regards to Pontus Tiedemann, obviously deciding not to go WRC2 again with Skoda Motorsport, you know, it is a little bit of a roll of the dice, I suppose, for his career and trying to find budget at this level.
Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult, especially when you've got so many, probably not enough WRC seats and too many good drivers, you know, fighting for them. I think it's probably a difficult decision for Pontus to not go back and do WRC2. It's probably, you know, a fairly simple deal for him to put forward. But, you know, challenging in a WRC, you've got to put yourself out there and go for it. And I think Sweden's a good event where, you know, usually the time's quite close together. I should give him an opportunity. He'll have, well, depending on the conditions, obviously it depends on the running order, but he'll be further back. So potentially that could be good for him. So yeah, it's a good event to start with. I think he'll definitely do a few more, and there's talk about him doing the second half of the season if he can put the budget together. So it'll be good to see him out. I can't see him, you know, scaring Elvin and Timu too much, but you know, it's a learning year for him, and you know, learning how, adapting to these 2017 cars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's still other drivers that could still come in at different points. I know there's deals to be done for a third car, so maybe our own Ryan Champion may even come back. Who knows? Listen, before we let you go, Ryan Champion, have you got a couple of minutes, or are you done for us now?
I've got to be going pretty soon.
Okay, well let's
give me two more minutes.
Oh, God bless you. Right, we Jack and I will talk about WRC2 when you've gone. If we could just get, we're going to do predictions because Trevor Agnew texted in his prediction. So I want to get your predictions for the top three, please, for Rally Monte Carlo.
This is a difficult one, isn't it? Callum Black asked the same question on Twitter the other day, and I said I honestly couldn't answer. I went round and round in my head the other day when he asked the question. It might be predictable, but I'm going to go for an Ogier win with Loeb second and Oit Tanak third.
Okay, that's where you heard it first. Jack Bennion, we might as well do yours before we let Ryan Champion go.
I'm going to go Nerville, Ogier, Tanak.
Okay, now Trevor Agnew just went with a winner. He just went Ogier to win. I'm going to go Loeb, Ogier, Tanak.
You've gone fairy tale.
I've gone fairy tale. I don't care. I've got a fairy tale.
Full Tony Simpson fairy tale spec.
Full funny.
But we'd love to see it, though, wouldn't we? We'd love to see it.
Well, that's what it's all about. Surely we've got a dream. So that's what I'm going to go for. And so Ryan Champion, you're going to be back with us next week. We can talk, of course, what happened on Rally Monte Carlo and all that went on before. Are you back in the country next week?
I am back in the country. Back in the country preparing for a big weekend for Jack Bennion and I, actually. No, we're not getting married. But. You know, we'll talk about that one next week.
Okay, I look forward to it. Okay. Folks, we'll be back after this break. Ryan Champion is going to go away somewhere, and Jack Bennion will be back with me to talk any other business and WRC2.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. We've just remembered Absolute Bennion. That's just come up in conversation before we came back anyway. Jack Bennion and myself are back. We've got a little bit of Monte Carlo to go. WRC2, R5s. What do you make of this WRC2 Pro, Jack Bennion?
I think theoretically it shouldn't be needed, should it? We shouldn't have to have this, but because R5s are so, it can be so expensive to run them, and when you come up against the likes of Skoda Motorsport running works teams and they're testing for 200 miles before an event, then it's pretty difficult to compete with that if you're a privateer. So they should either ban manufacturers entering full stop, which is incredibly difficult to do because someone will end up being manufacturer backed in some way, shape or form, won't they?
Yep.
Or you ban testing, which is also impossible to do because someone will find a way to be able to wriggle around it in rallying. So yeah, it's a difficult one. I still think there's a big issue of how much R5s cost and how much they cost to run, but I think as a solution goes, WRC2 Pro and WRC2 for privateers is a good idea, but it does make things extremely complicated for an average viewer who's trying to work out what on earth is going on when he's watching the R5s go past and think, is he WRC Pro, is he WRC2, is he registered for WRC2, is he in the RC2 class? God knows.
Do you think there could be an element of perhaps almost like a Teams Cup? Maybe that might have been a way to brand it maybe slightly different.
Like, yeah, possibly. It is obviously WRC Pro is aimed at manufacturers.
That's exactly what I but it's almost the wording of it, isn't it?
Yeah. No, that would help with making it sort of more you know, easier for people to understand what it actually is, I guess, for people who aren't really watching. But then I guess the argument there is that, you know, people who don't really watch rallying very often are probably not going to be watching WRC2 anyway. So it's a difficult one, but I think it's a decent solution for what they're trying to do. And it's given a lot of privateers an opportunity to fight for something that, you know, they probably wouldn't have done before, because they would have been nowhere near, because they're, you know, fighting a load of, you know, works teams.
Well, you know, we talk about that now. At the moment, obviously, we've got Skoda have registered with Rovan Pera. I tell you what I was really surprised about, by the way, with Rovan Pera, is how much of his own personal sponsorship was on the car.
Yeah, it was the same in Monte Carlo last year. If you remember, he had a good livery there with a lot of similar sponsors on it. Similar kind of sponsors he's brought from his days when he was in the S2000 as well, when he was doing the Latvian Championship. So, yeah it's good that he's got the support there. And there's obviously people in Finland, and probably he's probably got a few Latvian sponsors as well who, you know, think it's worthwhile and you know, see him as something that's useful, which is great for that country that they've got businesses that, you know, believe in their young talent and want to back it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But we've got a strong field of R5. I'm just looking at, obviously, we've got the top 20 entries that you guys have put in the paper this week. You know, friend of the show, Gus Greensmith there, new co-driver for Gus as well, obviously, with what happened with Craig Parry, of course, who we're trying to support with his new venture on the podcast. But Elliot Edmondson, who stepped up. Elliot's been around quite a while now. He's kind of been under the radar, I think, probably. Very similar, almost a mini Seb Marshall, dare I say, Jack Bennion.
Elliot Edmondson, yeah, absolutely. He's worked his way up. He's worked with a lot of young drivers, taking his opportunities where they've come. And, you know, everyone I know who's ever, you know, had him in the car have been really, really complimentary of his performance. And he's someone who adapts very quickly, I think. And, you know, everyone has their likes their notes delivered at a different speed and stuff like that. And he seems to be able to jump in a car with anyone and kind of adapt to that really quickly. So I know M-Sport, I'm not sure how much we can say on the podcast, actually. I know he was heavily involved with M-Sport last year and doing a lot of work with them to learn and get some experience on the events and stuff like that as well. So I think he knows the team really well. I think they like him and rate him really highly. And you know, I think him and Gus will be a good match. Similar age, you know, same kind of vibe in the car, I think, and they should get on really well.
Yeah. Now they're spearheading the WRC2 program or pro program for M Sport. Obviously, we've got Rovan Pera for Skoda Motorsport. Mads Osberg, I'm a bit lost on that one, Jack.
Mads Osberg?
Yeah.
Why are you lost?
I like Mads, right? And this isn't anything against Mads, but is this being turned into something that it's not?
I think it's... I don't know the details behind it. I think it's probably you know, what's he going to get out of doing an R5 round at this point? I don't see what the benefit is for Mads other than just to stay sharp and to have some fun, really. So if that's the case, if that's why he's doing it, then there's probably not many better events in the world to go and, you know, experience and have some fun off than Monty, but he's done it plenty of times. So, it's good for Citroën that they've got him in there.
This is the thing though. Is it good for Citroën? Or did he just rent the car?
Well, if he has rented a car, it's still good for Citroën because they take the plaudits, don't they?
So
it's good all around for Citroën, however that deal works. And I'd be very surprised if it's just a rent after, you know, Citroën have not gone with him again. You know, would he be quick to go back there and give them business? I'm not sure. I'm sure there'll be
It's a private team that's running the car, isn't it? It's not a Citroën Racing run program or nothing like that. It's actually
It is the team that always runs Citroën's works entries, though, isn't it?
Is it? If it is, then I must admit I misread that. It was DHK or something like that.
All right. Is that who's down on the entry list with?
I know it's not down on the entry list, but it's the people that are running the car.
I'll do some digging on that, Tony.
Yeah, do a little bit of digging. I'm sure someone will put it straight anyway on Twitter, but still, there you go. There you go. Are you giddy for Monty? Are you going to be all live in it? Jack, are you going to be all over it like a rash? As they say.
I don't know if I would say that, but yeah, I'm definitely going to enjoy Monty. It's one of my favourite events. I think it'd be difficult to match the excitement of last year when we had the the excitement of seeing what WRC All Live was going to be like, and then we had everyone go off on that same corner on the first stage, which was just absolutely incredible. It couldn't have been, apart from the problems that we had with WRC Live, which are hopefully, you know, they were sorted through the season, and hopefully they'll be all right again on the Monty. Apart from that, you know, it was just incredible to see that same corner and just see the cars all going off on the exit like every single time. So it's a unique event. Offers some real unique challenges for the drivers, doesn't it? And it can catch anyone out at any time, which is one of the things that made Turkey so exciting last year. It was like, it was weird, Turkey. It was like some rallying had found a new thing, attrition. It's like, it's back, the cars are breaking, everyone, you know, everyone's having to drive really safely and all that kind of stuff. You know, 10 years ago, obviously that would have been commonplace, or, you know, even 20. So, you know, Monty's got that vibe to it, hasn't it? The attrition and, you know, the fact that it can take you out of the event at any point, and it's a difficult one to win. So whoever does win it, I'm sure they will have earned it.
I've been over and watched. I don't know whether you've actually ever been over and watched at all, Jack.
On the bucket list.
Yeah, do it, mate. Get it done. But from a, dare I say, lowly level driver point of view, you go and watch it and go, do you know what? I'd love to do this. I really would love to do this. And then you watch some of the footage and you think, do you know what? I'm quite good just watching this. This is all right. I think I'm good just watching, because it is, apart from, you know, it is, and God, there's so many cliches that we do on this podcast, and I'm really aware of it. But when you go and actually physically see it, and I know you get all the footage anyway now with All Live, but I went to see it pre All Live, it is purely like four or five events in one. You know, the Tirreni can be three completely different surfaces altogether. And, you know, I've been a spectator on the Tirreni as well. And there is just something about the noise of the cars coming down. It is just spectacular. It really, really is. And I can't recommend it enough. Oddly enough, I ended up on the Tirreni with Chris Ingram. Of all people, watching me and Chris Ingram and my missus. But yeah, it's a good few years ago now. But we're going to preview other bits and pieces. I'm going to do Junior World Championship and stuff next week. We've got Tom Williams, a friend of the show, who's doing the Arctic Rally this week, which a lot of drivers seem to be kind of picking up on. Jack, I don't know whether it's an event you've been familiar with. I know various drivers have done it over the years as the testing and stuff like that. But Tom's over there about to do the Arctic Rally in an R2 Fiesta.
Yeah, it used to be a favourite of Toyota as well to send its juniors out there, didn't it? It used to do that. I know Phil Hall and I think Dan Barrett have done it as well, and quite a few people. So yeah, and obviously Valtteri Bottas this year, the F1 driver's doing it. So that'll be exciting. I think massive jump in the deep end for him to jump into a 2017 car, having never done a rally before on snow. I mean, never done a rally before at all, never mind any surface, never mind snow. So that'll be a massive challenge for him. But yeah, I think it's a good event. It always seems to have a lot of snow, which is something that, you know, sounds silly, but doesn't always happen on so-called snow events, does it? You don't always get that good snowfall, and that's always happens there. So yeah, I probably cursed it now, haven't I? Sorry, commentator's curse. But yeah, I think it's a fantastic event. Nicholas Gronholm's doing it as well, Marcus Gronholm's son. So yeah, it'd be mega to see how Bottas gets on. And yeah, I'm sure Tom Williams will learn a lot out of being out there and get some good experience Rally Sweden.
Another man who's went very well on snow and ice at the weekend, Oliver Solberg.
Yeah, Rally Aluksne in Latvia, I think I've pronounced that correctly.
Where are we at with Oliver? Because, you know, aside from the, if we took the surname out of this, right, let's pretend his name's Oliver Smith. Okay. Does that change level of expectation and also where we expect to see him go?
It's difficult with young drivers like this, isn't it? Where they've got the surname. It's difficult to separate the surname from their ability, isn't it?
I think
the clever ones use the surname for the PR, for the brand, you know, using that to attract sponsors and things like that, and making the most out of it, you know, using that name to their absolute best. But at the end of the day, the name doesn't drive the car, does it? So the guy sitting behind the wheel is going to have to be pretty good. And I think Oliver's looking like he's proven himself in different machinery. He's done a lot in rallycross. He was in that DS3 rallycross car at a very young age and winning rallies in Norway and that. So, well, rallycross rounds in Norway. So I think there's a lot to come from him. I think it's always difficult in this situation. We had the same thing with Robin Perro. We're thinking, is the competition on Rally Aluksne really representative of where you expect Solberg to go? You know, eventually we're expecting to see him in the JWRC or WRC2, aren't we? And, you know, I don't think Rally Aluksne is going to give him a good representation of, you know, the level of competition division that we have there. But everyone's got to start somewhere. You've got to do your learning and do your apprenticeship. So, I think it's the next step will be where we really find out how good he is, I think.
Absolutely. I just genuinely can't wait, because I just feel we're on a cusp of change, and that sounds really bizarre, because we did a whole section, of course, on Sebastian Loeb coming back before, but there is a period of change, and I guess we mentioned Pontus Tiedemann before. Pontus Tiedemann's 30 this year, and I guess he felt it was kind of this kind of an maybe now or never is a bit dramatic, but you're talking about Oliver Solberg, you're talking about Kalle Rovanperä, 17, 18 years old, they're in R5 cars now. And I suppose for someone like Pontus Tiedemann, he needs to be moving on, because the reality is if he doesn't move on now, it's never going to happen. And I just feel we're on this cusp. We've got so many young drivers that are waiting to come in. And R5, you've got the same concerns as me with rallying across the board with regards to cost and stuff like that. But at the moment, R5 is a really, really great platform, whether it's at WRC2 level or at DRC or whatever, or even moving, further down. I just think we're on the cusp of something, and I just feel the next 2 years, there's going to be a big change. And whether that change happens through natural organic, someone like Pontus maybe not quite getting where he wanted to go, and maybe he then makes way, and whether it's somebody like Elvin, who unfortunately, hopefully doesn't get another win, or Craig Breen doesn't come back in, all of a sudden there's the new guard coming through, and there's clearly a new guard waiting to come through, Jack.
Yeah, we have these cycles, don't we? I think interestingly, I think Finland's quite important to this, because they have cycles of funding young drivers, and they've gone through a sweet spot recently. Of there's quite a few coming through in Finland who, maybe general Rally fans aren't aware of some of the really young drivers coming through Finland at the minute, and some of the guys there. But they play a big part, because a lot of, obviously, Finland statistically produces a lot of rally drivers, and when they're getting funded, that's when the cream kind of rises to the top there, and we get a lot of those guys coming through. But yeah, I think there is a couple of drivers there. I don't think I'm quite as excited as you, Tony. I'm not sure there's that many coming through that. But then again, there's not that many seats, so I suppose at that point it doesn't really matter. But
I think there is, and the reason why I think there is because, aside from everything else, rallying feels really healthy everywhere.
I think to a certain extent you're probably right. I think that obviously we always go back to the grassroots, don't we? Because that's where we spend most of our time, most of our focus is. And I still think there's a lot more to be done there, and a lot more that can be done in national rallying and in lots of different countries, not just the UK, to stimulate entries and fairly simple stuff as well a lot of the time. I think we've had good signs in the UK, especially since David Richards come in. He's made a few regulation changes that have been very successful. It seems like there's a want at the minute to support young drivers. We've got lots of young driver programs being sprouting up at the start of this year, which is fantastic to see in smaller championships, giving good prizes like driving an R5 car and things like that. So if those kind of things keep up, I think people want rallying to succeed, and as long as people continue with that attitude, then we're in a good place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As you say, some great things announced, and things that have been confirmed. Unfortunately, there's things that have been announced that have yet to be confirmed. And let's see what happens with that one, shall we? Let's see what happens with
that one.
Wonder
what you're talking about.
Yeah. Someone's going to call it out soon. That's all I'm going to say. Someone's going to call it out soon, and they need to. Any other business, Jack Bennion?
Oh, it's difficult to do any business after we've been away so long, trying to think of all the things that I want to put across.
Well, just pick your favourite one. Do you want me to do mine while you're thinking?
Yeah, go on. I'll try and condense mine into the a top 10.
Okay, the guys, Rally Sport Magazine, EWRC Results, who are a great source of information for us all. They made a list of the gravel crews for the top boys on Monty.
Ah.
I love it. I'm going to read out to you. Loeb's got Patrick Mago.
Okay.
Who I remember doing, Ryan will remember him, he did Formula Rally over in the UK.
I remember him, he's been around for a long time.
Andreas Mikkelsen had Bernd Kolvold.
I don't know him.
No, me neither. Thierry Neuville's got one of my personal favourites, Bruno Thierry. Elvin's got his old man. is another one I can remember from Tino Sunonen has got Jussi Puskilisko.
Nice.
Yeah, good, I remember good, him.
Bad pronunciation either.
Yeah. Pontus Tiedemann's got Emil Bergqvist. Gus Greensmith's got Antoine Lesage, who's had before. Jari Matti Latvala's got Tony Gardemeister.
Oh, wow. That's brilliant.
Yeah, you see, this is what I love about this. Itanak's got Martin Kango, KNG. I know that name. Where do I know it from? Anyway, Chris Meek has got Stephen Whifford.
Okay.
There you go. There you go.
Martin Kanga, I think.
I seem to remember doing stuff. Yeah.
In an S2000 Fiesta.
Sounds about right. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think he's driven R5s and Fiestas.
Yeah, Mark and Martin run. He was running a Mark and Martin car.
Yeah.
There you go. Right. That was my only any other business. So it was a dead simple one this week. So so go on. What's yours, Jack?
It's still too difficult to choose. There's so many things to pick. I'm just genuinely excited about everything at the minute. I'll tell you what any other business is going to be. It's easy. It's an event I'm really looking forward to, which is on the same weekend of Race Retro on February 22nd, 23rd. And on the, I think it's 22nd, 23rd. Anyway, the Peugeot Challenge is being celebrated with an event at Race Retro. Go on, you sound like you're going to say something.
You know what? You've just reminded me yesterday, as we record this, it was actually the anniversary of the very, very sad helicopter crash that claimed Mark Fisher and Bertie Fisher. Of course, very sad. Mark just on the cusp of an amazing career, who just got an amazing prize with Peugeot. Yeah. And he got, you know, the prize driving the 206 World Cup. Things like we'll never see again. We're just never going to see those days again. So very apt. Sorry, mate.
You're good.
Yeah. So go on.
So the Peugeot Challenge started in 89 and produced pretty much every single significant British rallying person ever, didn't it, really? From that era. Just pull any name out of a hat and I guarantee they've done a round of it, or they've driven one of the cars from it, or it's unbelievable. Richard Burns, obviously famous, he was a junior champion, and Colin McRae actually drove the 309 in 88 as while Des O'Dell was working out the formula for how the championship was going to look. McRae basically tested it out while he was doing his event. So many famous names. Johnny Milner, the Higgins brothers. Yeah, Kev Ferber, who's organising the event, has done a fantastic job so far. There's going to be cars on show still, and also out on the stage as well at Stoneleigh Park, where Peugeot used to test back in the day. So a very significant place to do it. And then there's an evening do, which I believe has already got about 200 people going to it of varying nature. I think there's some very famous names from current rallying, and also from times gone by as well. And even some of the coordinators, Stella McCarthy and Keith Bile, is going to be there as well. So just a phenomenal group of people who will spread out across a massive web across rallying over the past sort of 30 years, and that event will be absolutely fantastic. So they've got some really cool cars there. They've got Richard Burns' championship winning car going. I know you do a lot of work with Tom Williams, Tony, and he's going, and his dad David, who backed Richard back in the day. And
I have been on the phone to David for an hour and 40 minutes.
I bet it's great.
I could talk to David, and I actually said to David before, we were talking about something completely different, you know, we do some stuff with Tom, but I said, David, you do realise that there's approximately three books in you, don't you? Because there's the period with Richard, there's the period he worked with David Higgins and some touring car drivers, and there's now this modern day period where he's obviously trying to help his son. I just said, you know, I know the journey they've been on. I've been on it with them for quite some time now. And it's not all what everybody thinks it is. And, you know, there's stories about with Richard and everything else, you know, everybody thought they were super millionaires and everything else, and some of the stories he's got of the things they did just to keep Richard going was just phenomenal. I'm sure our own Ryan Champion will be there. Of course, he was a big part of the Peugeot thing as well, and I'm sure we'll get Kev Ferber on to talk about this, I think, on the podcast. I think it's too good a thing not to address.
I think we need to give him the whole podcast, because even if you don't give it to him, he'll take it, I think.
Yeah, he probably will. So there you go. That's it for our bit this week, Jack Benyon. We're going to have a little break, and I'm going to come back with Martin Holmes, who's going to preview the season. Of course, he was at Autosport talking to drivers and everything else. So we're going to have Martin talking to us about what's going to be coming in the forthcoming season after this break. But Jack, you, me, Ryan Champion, and maybe even Trevor Agnew will be back next week.
Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm really excited about rallying at the minute. It's just everything's really positive at the minute. It's great, and I'm happy that Absolute Rally's back to try and unpick some of those brilliant stories.
I know, me too. Folks, thank you all for the download, as ever. As I say, we are going to come back after this break, but spread the love, spread the word, and again, without Kielder, we wouldn't be here. We will be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. Of course, episode 1, season 15. It is the Monte Carlo preview. Jack, Ryan and myself have been talking at length at the top, but we thought we'd get somebody who, of course, has always got his finger on the pulse and was at the launch, of course, on the Saturday Autosport Show this year, and was seen talking to many drivers and many team bosses. Martin Holmes, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi, it's good to be here, and it's an exciting year. Let's hope it's going to be just as good as it was last year.
I can't help but feel we speculated long and hard towards the end of last year about the musical chairs that was going to happen. We certainly speculated on drivers. We didn't speculate as much on team bosses, though. And of course, we've now got two fresh team bosses as well.
Well, certainly I expect the Hyundai change to be a lot more fundamental than the M Sport change. In M Sport, the position really hasn't, the work responsibility really hasn't changed. It's just that Malcolm has had a chance to do a lot more things elsewhere in his empire, which are probably waiting to be done. So don't expect much change managing in M Sport, but I think we can expect quite a lot of change in the management side of Hyundai.
How do you see that unfolding? Because, of course, Michel Nandan was very much a rally guy, you know, and you know, he of course, we got some rumours towards the end of last year that maybe some changes at Hyundai. I certainly didn't see him going. Maybe a restructure, and then of course the announcements of the sign of Sebastian Loeb as well, and I thought, okay, well, you know, the bolster in the squad. I didn't see the management change coming after the signing of Loeb, really.
No, but on the other hand, anybody who has one eye on football knows that a manager is only as good as the number of titles that he gains.
Now, very, 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 very true. I don't know too much about this gentleman that's coming to replace him at Hyundai. I know he's Italian. I know there was a lot of staff certainly on the Hyundai customer side that were ex-Arbath staff. Is this guy one of the ex-Arbath guys from back in the day of IRC, do you know?
Yes.
Right, okay. Right.
And, I mean, the Fiat was the pacemaker in Super 2000, and there he was there. And then, of course, he's done various other things, not the least, of course, was the wonderful Lotus, which never got off the ground.
Right. Okay. I didn't realize he was part of that as well. But you obviously would know this better than me. What do you see changing? What, you know, you said yourself then, there's going, you know, I can see there being changes. What is it? Is it going to be? Obviously, it's a different person. What can you see changing? Obviously, he's got.
Is going to be the division of responsibility.
Right.
Andrea, who I found to be a great guy and good fun to be with, is now responsible for as team principal, excuse me, team director. And without responsibility for the technical side, Nandan, of course, had his finger in all the pies. He left Andrea Adamo to be responsible for customer side, which meant R5, which meant then touring car racing and other activities as well. But now all that stuff is being hyped off to other people, details of which have still not been announced. And Andrea is hands-on the World Rally Championship and activities of that level. That's the main change.
Do you see, you know, obviously, it could be a massive shake-up, really, and we spoke about this earlier in the podcast as well, with Sebastian Loeb going there, you know, which I still find mind-blowing, Martin, to be honest with you. I really find mind-blowing the fact that Sebastian Loeb's with Hyundai. Maybe I shouldn't, but I do. I find it really odd in oh so many ways. But he's going to come in with so much experience. He's a 9-time world champion. Now, I put this to the boys earlier in the podcast. If the car has gone in a certain direction with, you know, Thierry was clearly the number one, and, you know, Andreas hasn't really got on with the car. I don't think Hayden was given a fair crack of the whip. Danny did a great job last year. I think it was very underestimated, probably what Danny did. You know, and really, there was probably more question marks against Andreas than all the other drivers, but he kept the seat because of his contract. Do you see Loeb's personality and Loeb's involvement changing the direction of the car much, maybe finding some of these weaknesses that invariably do come to light when they really start pushing?
Well, I think the unsettling factor in all this is, to what extent will Loeb actually be competing in the car? If he had a full program, I would have a lot more confidence in everything than having him as a part-time driver. Part-time drivers, as we have seen with other teams, leads to uncertainty, disruption, lack of motivation by other drivers. It isn't a wonderful opportunity. It used to be the way to do things before the World Rally Drivers' Championship came into operation. It used to be the norm in those days, but it's not like that nowadays. I worry a lot about the effect of Loeb having on the team. I mean, to what extent he can have any hand in the development of the car is very uncertain. I mean, he's only had, I think, 2 days of testing of the car already, and there's no way to lead the car into new directions. I'm worried a little bit about that. Then, Neuville, maybe the whole thing is a system to rev up Neuville, make him realise that he's 90% a championship, but noticeably 10% not a champion, not yet. And if the arrival of Loeb will force Neuville to up his game, well, then I think that would be the benefit of Loeb's arrival.
Do you think, you know, there was a lot said about Sebastien Ogier's time at M Sport, you know, and how he brought certain things, obviously, from his time at Volkswagen and his times with Citroën Racing prior to that. You know, he brought a different level, I suppose, of professionalism, and that's no disrespect. You know, M Sport said that themselves. There was a change of attitude. Do you see possibly a change of attitude at Hyundai having Loeb there? Do you think he's going to come in? Because, when a 9-time world champion walks into the workshop for a seat fitting, people do stop and take notice, don't they?
Yes, but whether it's going to work in a positive way, other than the effect it has on Neuville, I don't know. I really don't know.
With regards to the refugees, if you like, from Hyundai, were you shocked? I was very, very shocked that it was Hayden that was left on the sidelines, as much as to do with performance, but along with the fact of the support that he has clearly from Hyundai New Zealand as well. Were you shocked that he was the one that was left high and dry?
Well, having Loeb come into the team means that you can't have 5 drivers they can call on. Something has to go. And as much as I admire everything that Hayden has done, and I admire very much the consequence of him being in the top level, people for not only Hyundai in the region, in the other regions around the world, but also in the sport in his own country. It wasn't a perfect 100% involvement in the World Championship. It's nothing to say that he did anything wrong. It's just the fact that it wasn't an easy situation to manage, as you could say.
Andreas obviously has got year two of his contract now. You know, Ryan alluded to it earlier in the podcast with regards to it might even be Jack in fairness with regards to, you know, Andreas was the hot property 2 years ago. You know, he had both Citroën and Hyundai fighting for him. Hyundai gave him the 2 year deal. Is this a make or break for Andreas this year? Because he's another driver that's been around a lot longer than what you probably realise.
I think Andreas is in the World Championship this year because he had a good contract when he went to Hyundai, a contract which nobody could challenge. He was there whether the team liked him there or not. I just hope that for his sake that he can deliver the goods this year. But at the moment, he's coming from the back foot, as I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on to Loeb's former team, Citroën, clearly, you know, going with two cars. We've talked about this quite a lot at the top. Were you surprised that clearly they've set the stall out just purely to chase the driver's title? Because clearly, obviously, realistically, you need three cars to chase the manufacturers in this current climate. Were you surprised that they just went with the two-car team?
Well, it's all your eggs in the two baskets, as it were. It's a nervous situation. There's no, no safety net if anything happens to the existing drivers or circumstances change in any way. And, of course, everything depends on what Ogier manages to deliver when he gets the Citroën. I think a lot of that depends on the car. And the feeling I gained coming away from NEC was, in fact, there's a lot of better things with that car now than had been there before. Now, that then throws the light on Meek. And, I mean, Chris always used to say, I kept on telling him that they couldn't do this or they should do that, and they take no notice. And it's almost like somebody has been taking notice after Chris has gone. And certainly, when we talked to Ogier in NEC, there was no doubt about his confidence in the car, and he's not wasting his time by going back there. You know, he keeps on saying, well, of course, I'm not going to go in the other team other than stay in Citroën. But whether he stays there for 1 year or 2 years he's going to see how it all happens before he makes his future plans.
Do you feel that could be another management situation? Of course, you know, Pierre Bidard came in last year, obviously replacing Yves Matton. He must be, you know, it must be a precious situation for him as well, because I'm assuming, you know, and again, this is purely an assumption, the budget for the PSA group for their motorsport activities has been, you know, very much funneled towards a two-car team. Having been a three-car team with drivers bringing budget and obviously World Rallycross and everything else, that's now all being funneled into two cars in the World Rally Championship, and I suppose it's very much on his head.
Well, I think it's a knife-edge situation with Citroën. It can well go spectacularly right, or it could all fizzle out. We'll have to wait and see.
They're another team that, of course, have suffered from years, a bit like M Sport, really. And, you know, I suppose the other two teams are relatively new. I know, obviously, they've got a lot of history and everything else, especially Toyota. But both Citroën Racing and M Sport historically have sold World Rally cars, and that's how they've propped their situations with regards to the World Rally Championship, whether it's to fund the third car or whatever. And that was one of the things that I think came out. I read somewhere with regards to Citroën, obviously they weren't selling World Rally cars because the new generation cars simply don't sell. And M Sport have had that same kind of issue as well. Is, you know, they've kind of suffered for that, haven't they?
Well, I think anybody that bases the budget for the World Championship on the after value of their cars doesn't have a strong position. But certainly, when it comes to many other factors involved in running the cars, having a support from customers can't be bad, so long as the customers know their place and so long as the main eye is on the championships they're trying to win. So far as M Sport is concerned, the gist, if you read motorsport news this morning, is that they don't seem to be giving much hope for M Sport this year, which I don't think is a situation which is denied by Dovenby, but certainly is a reality. Had a good chat with Sunanen, which really for me was the first time, and he is a great guy. I think we might have something really going well there. As far as Evans is concerned, it's strange to think that little old Elvin is now the old man of the team. I think that's... I'm still waiting for Elvin really to come good. I mean, you can tell me all about winning Rally GB, but he still hasn't quite got that consistency, which makes a great driver out of him. And hopefully, having sooner than in the team, pushing him along from below, as it were, hopefully it'll get better for him. Certainly M Sport, you talk about Citroën having a two-car team. M Sport are the same, just with Elvin and with Sunan, and with the hope of occasional customer or locally supported drivers driving their cars. Not a strong situation with M Sport, even though it would be nice if things went their way.
Absolutely, you know, I thought it was very interesting, you know, Pontus Tiedemann, and we spoke about this earlier with regards to, you know, him taking that jump and severing ties with Skoda to kind of roll the dice. I didn't realise he's nearly 30 as well. I think he's 30 this year. So, you know, I suppose if he wants to kick on, he's done that. I think he's got budget for Monte Carlo in Sweden.
All that's confirmed at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, I know Gus Greensmith's obviously got the car or got one world car on one event as well. And yeah, I know there's deals to be done. As ever with M Sport, there's always deals to be done. And speaking to some of the guys up there that I do know, you know, there's a unique chance really for the right people that you can rent a car for an event. You don't have to commit now to many events. There is event deals to be done.
Yes, but not sure how that helps the main operation of winning championships.
No, I guess not. But I think, you know, like you say, I think they kind of know where they are. They've got, you know, young team, young management. You know, it's almost starting off on the back foot, but, you know, almost removing the pressure, I guess, because without a shadow of a doubt, the machine at the moment that we've seen for, you know, the last year, and it was really heading towards it. And I'm talking about Toyota, Martin. I think we were all partially guilty of scoffing at the idea when Tommy kind of got the gig and he was doing a lot of the testing and stuff like that of where this was going. And then you look at Toyota now and you think, well, that's the team to go to. That it's an absolute no-brainer. Out of all the teams, you would be going to Toyota Gazoo.
I mean, it turned out well, didn't it? I mean, it's certainly of the four teams, I have the greatest confidence for 2019 in Toyota. To what extent Meek will be generating success, I really don't know at the moment. It's nice to see Meek. I mean, I saw him smile in NEC. Now, that's not so bad, is it really? But Oit obviously is very much mature now. He's long since passed that nervous boy, unsure of himself situation. And of course, Latvala is a person who, the only reason why he hasn't achieved a lot of things for Toyota have been misfortunes in the team.
Yeah, he had a fair amount of bad luck. And, you know, again, I think he's another one which I think, you know, I'm a big believer, and I love the psychology in sports. And Gary Matty can be also his own worst enemy with regards to psychological aspects, I think, of the sport at times, because he cares so much.
Yeah.
I think that's sometimes I genuinely believe that's half the way. It's nothing to do with ability. It's almost because he cares too much. He tries too hard, and he kind of undoes himself.
I think that's his personality completely.
Yeah, it's but you know, Tommy seems to, you know, it's the green team lineup, isn't it? I suppose you could argue if you could choose, you would have Sebastien Ogier, maybe even Thierry Neuville in there. But out of all the lineups, that's the one I'd have. That's the one I'd have by a long shot.
Well, certainly with Oyton, with Latvala, I agree. I just still don't know exactly how Meek will fit into the picture. It might be perfect, or it might not.
I think, you know, there's an argument, obviously, whether he should have got the chance again. Tommy Mäkinen clearly sees something. Tommy Mäkinen clearly has a plan or an agenda, because he's the one that's got to look after these drivers. There'll be a natural pecking order a few events in, I'm sure there will, but as ever with all drivers and all teams, they say that you know, everyone starts on zero at Monte Carlo or wherever their season starts, and we'll go from there, and you know, they'll find the kind of the natural order within the team. But Tommy clearly feels that he can do something with Chris Meek, and you know, I think it'll be interesting. I think that's possibly one of the most interesting stories outside of actual stakes, times and results in our 2019 season to come.
Well, certainly Mäkinen has spotted what Oyt can't deliver, and Latvala doesn't seem to be delivering, and hoping that Meek will fit in the missing gap.
Absolutely. If I can just go back to Citroën just for a second. We speculated quite a lot towards the end of last season, and even at the beginning of this podcast, with regards to Esko-Pekka Lappi. You know, we had this outstanding start with Toyota, but seemed to tail off last year. He didn't have the same, you know, we were talking about Chris smiling. You know, Lappi seemed to lose something at Toyota, whether he knew he was coming to the end, whether he seen himself or he had to do as he was told as a driver. Maybe he didn't like that and be that supporting role. Really don't know. How was he at NEC? Did you spend any time with him?
Yes, and I'm trying to remember. There were so many interviews. I'm trying to remember everything that he was saying. But certainly, I came away feeling that he was well confident in what was going on at the moment.
Not daunted by the fact of having a multiple world champion as a teammate.
Well, that can't do any harm for him.
No, absolutely not. And
the thing was that Lappi, I think, was quite surprised at different factors when he went to Citroën. I mean, he was expecting that he was going to have crash language courses and everything like that. And he said, well, it's all pretty well, it's everybody speaks English, which was actually really nice confidence booster for him. And Budar, as you know, is well speaking in English as well.
Was that a surprise to see Lappi go to Citroën? Bearing in mind, they must have clearly had an idea they were going to go with a two-car team. You know, I assume they would have known that the Abu Dhabi funding was going in advance of that. Were you surprised that they went with a Lappi, I suppose, a junior driver with a season and a half's worth of experience, as opposed to going, I suppose, to, you know, someone with a bit more experience, bearing in mind, as I say, it's just a two-car team?
Well, for me, the surprise and disappointment with Citroën was the disappearance of Osberg, which fortunately isn't entirely gone now, and Breen. Lappi had to be obviously compared with Osberg and Breen, and as far as Osberg is concerned, he had other attributes, but nothing like the same experience as Osberg had. And with Breen, well, I think it's just sad that he's fallen into the fallen out of the frame at the moment. But certainly, Lappi had to move had to do something. If he stayed at Toyota, if he had the chance to do that, he would have stayed again as a number three driver, at least with Citroën. He's now a number two driver.
Yeah, and learning from a world champion, and a world champion that was there any, you know, you mentioned it before with regards to Sebastian Ogier's future, whether it's a year or whether it's 2 years or whether he'd move on again or whatever. Was there any kind of reference to the fact that, you know, this is it, we're going to have our time with Citroën, and you know, it will be what will be, and you know, we will ride off into the sunset into DTM or wherever it may be? Was there any reference at all to that?
Nothing like that at all. I mean, his mind is fully on rallying.
Okay, exciting. Yeah. Exciting. Was there anything else you picked up from the NEC from your time talking to principals and drivers and co-drivers and everything else?
No, not really. I think that we had such a fantastic season in 2018 that to hope for an equivalent success in the championship in 2019 is a long shot. But I don't think it's... I think excitement is waiting to happen. And we've got other things coming along, like the WRC2 Pro, which obviously has provided, seems to have provided a lifeline for Osberg. It's giving a ladder of opportunity for Greensmith. Be interesting to see how that works out. I mean, clearly we haven't seen the strength of Skoda's ambitions in WRC2 Pro. Hyundai have made a policy decision not to be involved in WRC2 Pro, even though they've got a very active R5 program. And Toyota are working on an R5 activity, which presumably in their case will mean WRC2 Pro, but they can't progress yet because the model on which a successful R5 car can be based isn't yet available. So WRC2 Pro, of course, was the background to everything that is going on in the WRC.
I can't help but feel, and again, we've mentioned this before on the podcast, I'm just not convinced by the name. I just think they could have done a bit more with the name. I don't know, but WRC2 Pro, it seems really clunky. It seems like it's, I get the concept of it, but surely there could have been something a bit more fluid.
Whether it was the FIA all over, isn't it?
Yeah, true. True, you know.
I mean, they desperately want somebody just to be floating around the halls of power, tap people on the shoulder and say, hey, do that one. It'd be a lot better for everybody. But they don't have anything like that. They make their decision and call something or other, and then take the view that, well, we gave it a try. So, yeah, not bearing in mind that a lot of people would tell them it's waste of their time making making this change.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think WRC 2 Pro, if we can call it that, is a great idea, and I'm hoping that it will give the second official layer to all the teams sooner or later.
And I can't help but feel, and you know, you may shoot me down for this one, Martin, but I've said it repeatedly, is that my big fear for the spike that we're on with WRC at the moment is that the current cars are not sustainable. And no. We could be in a position where R5 could be the category, the highest category.
And the current WRC formula is solid until 2022.
Yeah.
So it's got 3 solid years in which it's going to be the premier formula. And there's nothing, all the stability rules stop that ever being changed. Whether the steam will run out of the WRC in 20 and 21 remains to be seen, or whether, like has happened in Formula One years ago, they suddenly thought, well, we better make Formula 2 the formula because that'll be much more interesting for everybody, or more teams will be involved. I mean, that's always an option, but hopefully it won't be.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I don't want to lose them, but it's just always my fear when I hear about budgets and things like that. And the budget, I've been involved in budgets and stuff in the past for WRC teams, so I kind of got a little bit of insight. But yeah, it is a worry. But there you go. So you're not off to Monte Carlo. It's not very often we say this, but you're based from home very much. Obviously taking on all live and following Twitter feeds and everything else, I guess.
Well. It's a wonderfully close world sometimes. I mean, people at the end of phones, the phone calls to the rallies are going on all the time, non-stop.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, I'm going to be taking it all live. I genuinely can't wait to watch the first stages of the 2019 WRC season. Martin, thanks for joining us on our first episode back for 2019.
Good. I hope it all goes as well as... We hope it will do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we will welcome you back in the not-too-distant future. Folks, that has been our first episode for this season. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please spread the love, spread the word. You know where we live now. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/Absolute Rally. All the old episodes on absoluterally.co.uk. We'll be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week. This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid left crest, 86 right minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 on left crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.